Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Merritt Island, Florida, and was the ninth pick by the Kansas City Royals in the 1975 baseball draft. After a 10-year Major League Baseball career, he spent 15 years in the Colorado Rockies organization. And from 2011 to 2019, he was manager of the Pittsburgh Pirates. He's also the national spokesperson for Prader-Willi syndrome. The author of Hurdleisms, Wit and Wisdom from a Lifetime in Baseball, and famous for his thoughts of the day, his name, Clint Hurdle. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible. The Sports Illustrated cover from March 20th, 1978, stated, "This year's phenom." And it was a picture of our guest, Clint Hurdle. Clint, welcome. What an honor.
Well, thank you, Jack. I appreciate the opportunity to be on with you today.
How many of those covers do you have around the house, Clint?
I may have two because I just received one in the mail the other day to sign and ship back out. I think there's one in the house. It's not hanging up anywhere. I think I've got it upstairs in the workout room.
Okay.
I think that's where it is.
All right, let's go back. Your childhood, your mom and your dad. Talk about mom and dad.
Mom and dad are still with us today. They're still with me today. As a matter of fact, I'll be spending some time with them soon. My dad's 91. My mother's 89. Grew up on the east coast of Florida, small town Merritt Island. Mom was working. Dad was working. They did everything they could for us three kids, myself and my two younger sisters, Bobby and Robin, to have the things we needed to have to support us through our young journeys through elementary school and high school, and eventually for the girls into college. And me out on the road to life. My parents are wonderful. They've been great. They've been resilient. They've shared hard truth, honest truth, tough love, and real love. All you could ask for in parents.
Your dad worked at the Kennedy Space Center, so you got to go there as a kid. What was that like?
Well, it was overwhelming. When you go into the vehicle assembly building for the first time where they actually put the spaceships together, it's breathtaking. And to this day, you know, I have so many childhood memories of the different missions that took off from Cape Canaveral and then Cape Kennedy, and then they changed the name back to Cape Canaveral. But my dad was on part of the liftoff group, and he would go in usually a day or two early and have to pack some luggage because sometimes, you know, those missions would, they have to be put on hold based on weather. And he would have to stay there. It wasn't like they could run back and forth from home. But it was an exciting time on the Space Coast with the space industry up and coming and very overwhelming for everybody involved. I mean, you know, to take a person and to, for the rocket to launch off a space pad, you know, off a launching pad, and then for it to travel around the world and around space and come back and land safely, was a pretty awesome accomplishment. And unfortunately as well, that didn't happen every time. So there were some hard times along with the space program growing up over there, but we got through it. It was just the feeling you would get 15 miles from launch site where we lived. You could feel the ground shake under your feet that far away. And those astronauts were like, I mean, they were superheroes to us back in the day.
The right stuff, the original seven, right? Phenomenal.
Yes.
Okay. You were accepted at Harvard, but you chose a baseball career. Why so?
Well, about the age of five, my dad looked down into me, my eyes, and said, "Hey, you want to play catch?" And it's been 62 years later. Actually, I played catch with my dad a month ago. He's 91 and I was 67 on his birthday. But playing catch at baseball, it's been a part of my life, and it obviously put me on a trajectory that's still in place today in and around the game of baseball. Harvard was a wonderful opportunity. I was probably more drawn to going to Harvard than I would have been going to play football. I had a number of football scholarships as well. Only two schools offered me a football and baseball deal. That was the University of Miami and the University of Virginia. But Harvard, once you visit Cambridge, I think anybody would not, I mean, you'd be incapable of not dreaming about what it'd be like to go to school there and what that opportunity of 4 years could provide for you for the rest of your life, whatever direction you chose to take within industry or business or education. Still drawn to the Ivy League schools.
All right, you were drafted by the Kansas City Royals, first round, ninth pick of the 1975 draft. What was the life of a minor leaguer back in the mid-70s like?
Well, it's exciting. You don't know any different. You're away from home. You're on your own. Baseball, there's no school. You know, the college guys used to really have a big contrast because, you know, there was times they had to go to school and play, and now there was no more school. For me, I'd been high school, but it was a little different. You're on your own. You got to fend for yourself. You got to figure things out. Mom and dad can't clean up a mess if you make one. You're usually bunking into an apartment with four or five other guys, as many guys you can fit in to sleep comfortably. You know, you've got your George Foreman grill. You've got, you know, you find ways to cook or not cook, not burn. Waffle House was a staple of our calendar. Usually in the morning and usually after the game at night. But it was some independence, some challenges, you know, some life lessons along the way. Small towns, smaller crowds. You know, some of the conditions probably weren't as nice as the high school field that I played on. But it was all part of the journey to become a big leaguer and the sacrifices you had to make along the way. So it was real manic for me. You know, the buses, you know, they weren't always hotels because hotels have two floors, motels. Were normally what we stayed in, we piled into together. Bus rides, eating at truck stops. There was no food anywhere near a clubhouse before or after a game. But then you got to go out and play the game. And no matter where it was or in front of how many people you were engaged in, it was the game of baseball. And I've always been drawn with a passion to the game of baseball.
We're talking to Clint Hurdle, and 50 years later, he's still in baseball as a special assistant to the GM of the Colorado Rockies. When we come back, we're going to ask him about September 18th, 1977. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Rasula. We're with Clint Hurdle. Clint, let's go back. September 18th, 1977. You're 20 years old. Tell us about that day.
Exciting day. I had been told a few days before by Whitey that I'd be starting that game. I was able to reach out to my mom and dad and my sisters and get them on a flight, and they came out and they were there for it. Packed house. A&P Day. Remember the old food chain, grocery store chain, A&P?
Sure,
if you're in the Midwest, you may have not, but it was a packed house. I'm in the lineup, and I can remember getting ready for my first at-bat. Yes, nervous. Yes, jittery. Yes, couldn't spit. And our hitting coach, Charlie Lau, said, Clint, you might want to take a pitch. Just take the first pitch just so you can get a feel for things. You know, it's been a while since you played. I had gotten called up like about four other players from our Triple A team, Willie Wilson and Bill Washington, had already got playing time. I was the last one to engage in playing time. So I hadn't had any game activity in probably over a week, and Charlie just thought it'd be a good idea to take a pitch. So I go up my first at bat. Glenn Abbott's on the mound, and he releases the ball, and it's really big, and it's in the middle, and it's up over the plate. And I can remember the little voice saying, take a pitch, and there's me saying, no, you want to hit this pitch? No, take it, hit it, take it. So I started my swing, and I stopped it. And the ball proceeded to hit off my barrel, a check swing, a two-hopper to third base. The third baseman was Bill Stein, who I had worked out with that entire winter in Florida. He was from Rockledge. I was from Merritt Island. Two-hopper to third, check swing, first pitch, throws me out by 20 feet. I'm running down first base. You want to talk about a run of shame. It was a run of shame for me down to first base. By the time I got in the back of the dugout, I was catching all kinds of noise from everybody in that dugout. Oh, Triple A MVP, big swing, check swing. Oh, my God. I mean, I can't even remember. It was a lot. Eventually, as I put my helmet up, Charlie grabbed me, touched me on the shoulder, and said, come back here, Sal. So I went back around the corner, sat down. He goes, I thought we were going to take a pitch. I said, Charlie, I really was. I don't know what happened. I saw it. It was big, and I messed up, man. It was horrible. He goes, hey, Clint, forget about it. He says, next time up, you don't need to take a pitch. If you see it good, put a good swing on it. Let's see what happens. It was next at bat, a few pitches into the count. Glenn Abbott released another fastball up. Jay Bell, my friend Jay Bell, who used to play for the Pirates, calls them high-hanging heaters. Guy threw me a high-hanging heater. I put a swing on it, Jack, and to this day it might be one of the longest balls I ever hit in my life. It bounced off the second terrace in Royal Stadium and bounced out of the ballpark. There were water fountains out there, so the ball bounces out of the ballpark. I round the bases. Mayberry, who I picked up bats for back in 1965 or 66 when he was with the Cocoa Expos, and I was a bat boy, clubhouse kid. I was on base. He welcomed me at home. And now the clubhouse was kind of quiet. I mean, the dugout was very quiet. I mean, they just seen a kid have his first bat, check swing ground ball to third base, and now they see him hit one. He hits it out of the ballpark. To this day, I have a ball in my office upstairs where it may be my home run ball. It may not be my home run ball because a guy came walking in who came late to the game and said, hey, this ball bounced off my car. I don't know what it's from, and I heard the young kid hit a home run, so maybe it's his. How about that?
We got to get our friend Kevin Keating to authenticate it. That's what we got to do. Okay. We're talking to Clint Hurdle, and he was labeled a phenom by Sports Illustrated at age 20. You signed for $55,000. Shohei's getting $70 million a year. What? You ever talk to your mom and dad say, why couldn't you have waited 40 years?
No, really. I mean, it's a topic of discussion every year when the draft comes up. But we signed for over $50,000. We signed for stock options. We signed for what we thought was a very good deal. And at the time, it was. Based on what guys had gotten years before and gotten that year, it was more than fair. Plus, it was a dream come true. And it was an opportunity to play. We actually had a joke 2 years ago. I work with the Rockies now, and our first-round pick was the ninth pick. His name is Chase Dolander. He's a college pitcher out of Tennessee. He signed for $6.9 million. So that would have been 2023. I was 1975. 48 years later, it went from 55 grand to 6.9 million. And I think Chase was happy with his deal, and I know I was happy with mine.
Just a few more zeros. Okay, speaking of a dream come true, 1980, you hit 294, your best year. You're in the World Series. You go 5-for-12. Talk about being in the World Series.
Well, another dream come true. I mean, what kid isn't playing wiffle ball in the backyard and talking about being in Game 7 of the World Series or imitating batting stances from guys he's watching on TV? I'd always dreamt of playing a World Series. I'd always dreamt of being a World Series champion. I always dreamt of being in the big league. So it was another mile marker, you know, on my journey. The best part of it was my mom and dad were there in Philly for the start of the series and then traveled back with me to Kansas City. They were there for every game of that World Series. They were there for every game of the 2000 World Series in Boston and Colorado. And they were with me for every game of the 2010 World Series when I was with the Rangers, the hitting coach in San Francisco and in Texas. So those are the things that you hold tight to your heart.
God gave you an angel by the name of Kelly McGregor. Tell us about him.
Quite frankly, the second most important man in my life outside my father. Kelly was the first man that really let it be known to me that he cared about me, not how far I could catch it, throw it, hit it, or not what I could accomplish as a coach by teaching or leveraging or witnessing. Kelly was our team president when I was the hitting coach in Colorado, and actually he was one of the guys in the decision-making process that gave me the opportunity to become the manager of the Rockies in 2002. And it was all about leadership development with Kelly. I would ask Kelly, what do I need to do to be a good manager? And he said, be managerial. I said, what does that mean? He goes, The name on the front of the jersey is real, Clint. You're never going to get away from that. I want you to remember wherever you go, day, night, here, on the road, you represent the name on the front of the jersey. You said that name on the back, hurdle, you're representing the people that have loved on you and the fingerprints that they've put on you and raised you and grow you. Never lose sight of that. And he always would reinforce to me that, you know, his job was to make me the best man I could be, and that he felt that would put me in a position to be the best manager that I could be. So we talked about life. We talked about kids. We talked about challenges. But he was the one that really got me into the mindset of service before self. And my job as a manager, truthfully, was just to make everybody else's job easier.
You talked about children, and you also mentioned 2002. In 2002, God gave you guys an angel named Maddie. Please.
Well, Madison Riley Hurdle was born on the 7th of August, 2002. And she was a little bit early. We felt that she was just probably like a lot of other babies. She was a preemie. Was having trouble taking a bottle. She was kind of floppy. She had a little tint to her. They called jaundice. But nothing that raised any eyebrows initially. It was after about a week, though, of similar behavior and not any growth, strength, the color didn't go away, the floppiness didn't go away, the inability to take a bottle didn't go away. Dr. Zarlingo, who was at Swedish Medical, wanted to perform some tests. And through that process of testing, I think 12 different tests over a two-week period, nothing came back to say that she wasn't normal. And we got to the point as parents where we just see enough tests. Leave her alone. She'll be fine. Leave her alone. The crying, the blood, you know, the blood tests, all this. We all had enough. And Dr. Zarlingo gave it a couple of days, and she came back to us and said, hey, look, I can't even imagine what you're going through, but I have a favor to ask. I want to take one more test. And it's a FISH test for a chromosome deletion, which now we're on high alert. This is a conversation we've never had before. But through her care and her love and her knowledge, you know, at least we could eliminate one more thing. And she gave the testing, took the testing, and Maddie proved to have a deletion of the 15th chromosome. And I can remember that day like it was yesterday. Dr. Zarlingo walked us down a hallway into a room, like you've seen happen on TV and movies, and told us that our baby was born with a birth defect. And this wasn't the flu. This wasn't a cold. This wasn't something that is fixable. We'll have to take it one step at a time, one day at a time. And she had some specialists that she encouraged us to reach out to. And she loved on us. But that was probably almost 3 weeks after Maddie's birth that we found out that our baby was going to be different and was going to need all the love and support not only we could provide, but everybody else in her posse, in our network, and in our family.
And you've become the spokesperson, national spokesperson for Prader-Willi syndrome, which one out of every 12,000 people have. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Rasula. We're with Clint Hurdle, the author of Hurdleisms, Wit and Wisdom from a Lifetime in Baseball, which we'll talk about in a little bit. What one or two best pieces of advice would you give to any manager?
Find people that will tell you the truth. That will, you know, speak truth to power. You don't need bobbleheads in your life. You need people that are going to tell you what you need to hear and not what you want to hear.
One of your heroes was John Wooden, the Wizard of Westwood. What made him so special?
I just think with John, it was the the fact that John learned at his father's knee, and he learned life lessons that he made to be practical for sport. It was all about the pyramid of success, how laying one block really can determine the effect that another block laid next to it can have, the cohesion and collaboration you can build on a team when you're selfless, the importance of service before self, the importance of preparation, championship preparation. Championship execution is wonderful, no doubt, but we don't always execute at a championship level. But then to have a championship review. So the preparation and review are in your control. The execution sometimes, not so much. I just never stop learning from Wooden. He's one of the guys that I still send out a Wooden Wednesday clip on my thoughts for the day. Every Wednesday, I've been doing it for 15, now 16 years. I still learn from Coach Wooden. And the other thing that just blows my mind, he never raised his voice at his team. I can't say the same. I'll go in with that mindset sometimes, but it doesn't work out that way for me. But I think the other fact, he was just a lifelong learner, and he had such a good approach when sharing. His tone and his timing were always just what was needed for the situation.
He was famous for his pyramid of success, and he once said that, "I don't think I was a fine game coach. I'm trying to be honest. I think I was a good practice coach," as you were saying.
And I think that's the beauty of coaching, is that sometimes, I found myself getting in the way of the game when I wasn't playing it. Players play the game. That's why they're called players. And you've got to work to a spot. You need to work to a spot where you're a guide on the side. You're a GPS. You're a compass. But they need to go play, and they need to know they have the freedom to play where they're not looking over their shoulder. They're not looking up the general manager's booth. They're not looking in the dugout. They're just out there playing with that freedom and that passion that they had when they were 6 years old playing in the backyard. And I think that's one of the things that I also took from John Wooden once the game would start. I really tried to stay out of the way and only impact when something came to me, not that I tried to create.
Okay. You've said a lot of the out-of-box things, but one thing that I saw you said years ago, I quote you, "Dorothy from The Wizard of Oz was one of the all-time leaders." Really?
Yeah, and that kind of hit me. I was probably watching The Wizard of Oz for the 450th time in my life. We were in Pittsburgh. I want to say it was early November. It was coming on. I'm sitting with my kids, two young children, my wife Carla, Christian, and Maddie. And all of a sudden, the scene changed. It actually went from black and white to color. And I look at my wife and go, "Honey, I get it. I get it. Oh, my gosh." She goes, "Clint, it turns from black and white to color every time at this point in time in the movie, every time." I go, no. I go, "Dorothy, she's the most incredible leader ever." My wife looked at me like, "What are you talking about?" I go, "Hey, look. She took three people who felt less than, right? She took three people who had less than. She got them to look inside themselves and become more than." I mean, how many times in my life have I told, "He doesn't have a heart. He doesn't have a brain. He doesn't have any courage." And as they walked that journey that they called the yellow brick road that we can call sport or life, by the end of it, they were transformed by somebody else believing in them. And those four words, "I believe in you," is what Dorothy told the Cowardly Lion, the Tin Man, and the Scarecrow throughout their journey. And it manifested them and helped turn them into something that they could never have become on their own.
All right. You're famous for your thoughts of the day. Over 8,300 people get them every day. They started in 2009. How did this start?
Kelly McGregor challenged me to get a group together. Actually, he voluntold me that one of my leadership progressions would be to have a, what we would call now a study, and to get people from various parts of the organization to sit down in leadership roles and sit down and have a topic and to cut it up. Whether it be a book, or whether it be an article. So we had some people from the front office. We had some people from stadium ops. We had some people from corporate sponsorships. We had some people from ticketing. And we would meet twice a homestand and have a little impromptu get-together where we would spend 30 minutes on a topic, 15 minutes on everybody sharing their thoughts of the topic, and then a Q&A, just a round table for the last 15 minutes, took an hour. And it was turned into just a great opportunity for people that never had gotten together before to share leadership ideas or challenges they were facing in leadership or successes they were having in leadership in their respective departments. And then lo and behold, as we get into the season, I get fired. And around, I think I want to say there's the day before the 4th of July. I'm in the Outer Banks. I haven't had a 4th of July vacation, which I hadn't had. I think it was 72 years. I think it was 17 when I had my last 4th of July vacation, and now I was 52 years old. And I got a phone call as I was out picking up some groceries in the Outer Banks at a grocery store, and it was one of the female attendees of these meetings. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, how are you doing? She goes, well, how are you doing? And I said, well, it's kind of different. You know, you guys are going to have the July 4th game tomorrow, fireworks and everything else. I'm in the Outer Banks. I go, I've never not been in uniform in a long time. July 4th. She goes, well, how is that? I go, you know, it's okay. I'm with Carl and the kids and some family, so I'm good. She goes, well, she goes, Clint, I've been thinking about calling you for over a month, and I'm not good. Those meetings were so impactful. There was so much influence. There was so much love and support. They made me better. I felt better. I was growing as a leader, and then the plug got pulled. She goes, the crazy part for me, Clint, is while you were here, you would write at the bottom, because I would take notes during the meeting, and I would send them a text the next day, Jack. At the bottom of the text, I would say, make a difference today. Love, Clint. She goes, you remember when you wrote that? I go, yeah, I do. She goes, well, I don't think you're making a difference. You're not making a difference in my life anymore, and I don't think you love me. Wow. So Carla, when I got home, Carla said, what happened? You look like, I go, honey, I got hit by a truck, but I didn't, and I told her what happened. She goes, so what are you going to do? I said, well, I'm going to take a walk. I'm trying to figure this out. She goes, there's really not much to figure out, is there? I go, what do you mean? She goes, just send them the text. Come up with the text messages. You have thoughts all the time. You share it with me. You journal every day. Put something together and send it to them. That's what they want. Well, I called Kelly and wanted to get his thoughts because I didn't want to just walk back into people's lives after I'd been fired. And Kelly goes, you know, Clint, I was going to give you a call down the road because leadership has no boundaries, and there's been people here that miss you not being here. And it hurts me because I was part of the decision-making process and team that fired you. He said, but I think it's wonderful that somebody else reached out to you organically and told you they needed you. And you had made an impact in their life, and you had made a difference in their life. And the love you were giving them made a difference. He goes, I would encourage you 100% to keep it up and then to never stop. Never stop sending those thoughts to other people. So that's where it originated. Started with 12. Went to hundreds, thousands, now it's over 8,300. It still goes out 6 days a week. There's a daily encouragement, and then there's a daily devotional. And you can still get them today free at clinthurdle.com. You type in your browser, clinthurdle.com. It'll take you right to a short, small website, and you can sign up for free.
Clint is C-L-I-N-T, Hurdle, H-U-R-D-L-E.com. And I'm Jack Rasulla, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR.
You've been listening to your inspirational fireside chat, Anything Is Possible, for nearly 20 years.
This is Anything Is Possible, and I'm Jack Crisula.
But what has Jack been up to lately? Search at AIP Speaker Series and find out. Jack has interviewed thousands of historical voices, some of whom have offered him their philosophy of life, like Tom Izzo.
And Tom writes, work hard, persistence always wins out, discipline is the highest form of love. Stay humble.
The great Ernie Harwell.
My aim is to do justice, love mercy, and walk humbly with God.
And the voices of our generation.
I am reassured continuously that His unfathomable love and mercy are the greatest gifts of my life and my constant source of strength, reassurance, and guidance. His Holiness, Pope Francis.
At AIP Speakers Series is the YouTube channel where all of these jewels can be heard, including some of Anything Is Possible's greatest guests.
And we're with Mitch Albom.
The Little Liar is really a book about truth and lies and the price we pay when we lie.
This is Anything Is Possible, and with Tom Watson.
My father loved to play with the pros at the club. Developed a very quick friendship with Stan and played some golf with him. And then he would ask me to play golf with him and Stan.
Our guest this week was born with a rare disorder characterized by the absence of arms and legs. His name, Nick Vujicic.
Something that every human being actually deals with, Jack. It's the choice of continuing to believe or giving up.
And recordings of the AIP Speaker Series events at St. John's Resort. Go to YouTube and search at AIP Speaker Series. It's free. And remember,
anything is possible.
Spohom. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible. We're talking to Clint Hurdle. From 2011 to 2019, he was manager of the Pittsburgh Pirates, and he made them a perennial winner. And in 2013, he was named National League Manager of the Year. The phenom had arrived. Okay, speaking of arriving, we've got a new book, Hurdleisms, Wit and Wisdom from a Lifetime in Baseball. Clint, what do you want us to take away from this book?
My hope was for this book to be of support to others. I've been to a mountaintop. I've been to a valley. I've been to dark places. I've been to places where I thought I didn't have a friend, which was never accurate, but that's the way I felt. I felt less than. The book is to just share with people my experience, strength, and hope, and to let them know that no matter where they are today, there could be a better tomorrow, but it takes action. It takes accountability. It takes responsibility.
There's five parts to the book. Part one, spring. Part two, summer. Part three, all-star break. Part four, fall. Part five, off-season. And in part three, all-star break, you talk about navigate the ups and downs in life like a champ. How can each of us do that?
Well, I think it goes back to something we talked about earlier. I don't do many things by the seat of my pants anymore. I used to just think I had everything figured out and I could just show up and go. I prepare now before I do anything. Then my execution at least has, I've almost walked through it. I've visualized it. Then I execute to the best of my ability. And then afterwards, then I honestly self-evaluate and review it and see what did I do well? What could I have done better? Make some comments, get some thoughts, and then just, okay, check that off the box, and next time we'll see where it leads us. But I do think there's times when we get caught up in the final product, you know, the HOV lane for success. It doesn't happen overnight. I share with people, you know, the enemy of good is being great. But to be great, it's just being good for a long, long time, which is really hard. But if you've had a good day, celebrate. If you have a few good days, celebrate. Maybe you had a good week. And if you have a good week, enjoy it. Because a couple good weeks could lead to a good month. And, you know, a couple good months, that can lead to the end of the day, you had a good year. Guys in the Hall of Fame, Todd Helton, my buddy, he got to the Hall of Fame because he was good for a long time. People that become elite in anything in life, it's just their consistency. It's their grit. They stick with it. They're going to get knocked around. They're going to have setbacks. You cannot have a bounce back without a setback. But you got to have a place to go that you believe. My faith is important to me. My sobriety now is important to me. And I've got a posse of love that's important to me. And I got people that will tell me the truth when I'm out of line or I'm misthinking or I'm disconnected. Those all play a part in me being the best version of me.
All right. Part four. Number eight is finish strong in life. It's very important to finish well. Talk about finishing strong.
Well, you hear a lot of things that doesn't matter. You know, it's not important how you start, it's how you finish. There's truth to that. More often than not, you know, seasons aren't won in the beginning. Seasons can be lost in the beginning. You dig yourself too big of a hole. That being said, no matter what, you owe it to yourself and whoever you're working with and for to finish the task strong. Try and create some momentum. Get some traction. One thing I used to remind our players of all the time is traction was big to me. That means a foot is down and we're moving forward. But you never get traction, Jack, without some friction. Friction's not a bad thing. Confrontation's not a bad thing. Those can be block builders that can lead to better things. So by focusing on moving forward incrementally, you know, small gains, what do you hear in football all the time? Move the chains. You know, time of possession, move the chains. Life's the same way. Time of possession, move the chains. One step at a time, one day at a time can lead to some pretty incredible things.
Since 2022, you've been special assistant to the GM of the Colorado Rockies. We start our new season this week. What does a special assistant to the GM do in a Major League Baseball team?
I jokingly tell people I do everything that the GM doesn't want to do. That's why I'm special for him. In my case, being a husband.
It's like being a husband. Right?
It can be. Yes, sir. Bill Schmidt is our GM. And Bill Schmidt was the director of scouting when I was there. He actually was the director of scouting for the Rockies organization for almost 25 years. He reached out to me because my history of experience is in player development. So I'm spending 80% of my time in the organization in player development. That's up and down our affiliations, minor league baseball. Young managers, young coaches, young players, young pitchers. Watching, observing, making suggestions, asking them questions, trying to be a little bit of a GPS, you know, or, again, a guy down the side. Hey, have you thought about trying this? Saw you do this really well the other day. Now, can you maybe add this to it? So I'm up and down the minor leagues, all levels. I go to the Dominican. I spend time in the instruction league. And then I also spend time doing some scouting, high school scouting, college scouting within the state of Florida. And then I'll spend time with our scouts pre-draft week before the big draft every year now at the All-Star break. And pouring into those men as well. I do a lot of encouraging within our organization. We are in a hard spot. We're trying to rebuild, to recalibrate, to reignite in a very hard division. But there's no excuses. You know, we've got to get better. We've got to be better. And one of my efforts is to go around and make sure I'm finding ways to stay positive and to look to continue to self-improve so they can be somebody that can help improve other people that they're touching.
Sports Illustrated named you an up-and-coming phenom. Okay, 1978. Well, you've become a phenom of a man and a human being and a servant leader. Please keep up the great, great work.
Jack, thank you. That's very humbling. It's been an honor to spend time with you.
Please join us next week. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spohon.
Believe in yourself.